Hey everyone, this is Tom Hunt of the Wireless Communications Alliance, and you're listening to the Connections Podcast, where we provide a deeper dive into all things wireless.
I sat down recently with Charlie Green of PowerCast to talk about RF wireless power. Here's our conversation.
Charlie, good to talk to you again.
Yeah, nice to talk to you again, Tom.
So, you guys have been very busy lately. I've been very excited to read some of the news. As you know, the WCA tracks the wireless power industry and has been interested in some of the things you've been doing. But I thought for our listeners, one of the helpful things might be you to give us an overview of RF wireless power.
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. So I guess when I talk about RF wireless power, I break it into two different categories. I look at RF wireless charging and I look at RF harvesting. Those are two different things. When we talk about RF wireless charging, we have a dedicated transmitter, and that transmitter generates an RF field. That RF field gets sent over distance to a receiver. That receiver is our chip and an antenna, and it pulls that field back out of the air, converts it into usable DC, and then you can power electronics or recharge batteries with that. So it's really an end-to-end system. When you look at RF harvesting, that's where there's some source of RF in proximity to your receiver, but you don't necessarily control that. So that could be an RFID reader, it could be a mobile phone, it could be a Wi-Fi router. But you generally know that it's there and you know the amount of energy it's putting out. So you can design a receiver to capture that energy and harvest it and take that energy and accumulate it in a capacitor to do some type of charge and fire application or to trickle charge a battery. So that's kind of how I look at RF wireless power in general. But really, the point of the technology is to get energy from point A to point B without a wire.
That's a good explanation. Thank you, Charlie. Can you go a little further? Are you suggesting that if there is a wireless router in proximity, your receivers could potentially pull power from the energy that's being emitted through the air?
Yeah, it is possible to harvest from RF, but you need to make sure that the amount of energy that's being transmitted is strong enough to produce the amount of power you need on the receiver side. So just like communication chips, the receivers have a sensitivity, so do RF to DC converters. However, the sensitivities tend to be, you need a lot more power when you're talking about trying to charge a battery than just get a data communication signal to a receiver. So with a data communication link, you might see a receiver that's got a sensitivity of minus 100 dBm. But when you're talking about looking at RF power, minus 30 dBm is only a microwatt, right? So when you start looking at the sensitivities, typically you're in anywhere from minus 20 all the way up to plus 20 is kind of the ranges that we typically deal in when we're talking about harvesting energy. So somewhere between that kind of 10 microwatt range up to like 100 milliwatt range.
Okay, that's great. So we talked about RF wireless power. Tell us about PowerCast.
Yeah, PowerCast has been in business for almost 20 years now. We were founded back in 2003. I've been with the company since day one. So pretty much spent my entire career, both in grad school and here at PowerCast, doing RF wireless power transfer, both on the chip design side and kind of system level design as well. We focus on a lot of mobile and computer peripherals, IoT type devices, things that are lower power. So things like your keyboards, your mice, your game controllers, TV remotes, things like that. A lot of sensor applications where you might have a piece of rotating machinery or a robotic arm, something where you can't run wires or you don't want to run wires because of repeated movement and flex of those wires over time that can break those. So those are the type of applications where we can send energy to either recharge the battery inside the device or to make it completely battery free, which is advantageous in a lot of processes like drying of different types of foods and things where they don't necessarily want to have batteries inside there, because if they were to leak, they would obviously ruin that particular product. So it's a great application for us where we can send the energy in to power the sensors.
And can you expand on that a little more? What are the key market opportunities for PowerCast with your RS wireless power?
So our technology is very horizontal. We can go into many different end markets, whether that's consumer electronics or industrial IoT, medical or an automotive. I can give you some examples of some products. We are in a smart cricket ball. So obviously with a ball, you can't really put a USB-C on the side of it to recharge it, because it's going to obviously get damaged and it also throws off the balance of the ball. So that's a great application where we can send energy into the center of the ball where the electronics are to recharge it. We're in a digital luggage tag from British Airways. In that application, we use RFID infrastructure in the airports, and we harvest from that RF energy to activate some circuitry inside of the luggage tag to enable some unique security features. And we're in a lot of other applications as well, but those are just kind of a couple quick ones.
And just to clarify, those are exciting applications. I got to look up the cricket ball application. But when you look at this is relatively low power kind of applications today, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So you really won't see anything from us talking about recharging cell phones. I think some of our competitors on the market like to talk about charging phones. A phone is a relatively high power device. And I think, is it technically feasible to recharge one? Yes. Is it practical? I think we could give back some of the energy that the phone is using, using RF charging. But in reality, people want their phone to charge as fast as possible. And even some of the first generation Qi technology, which is the basically pad-based charging that's in phones today, isn't fast enough. That's why you're seeing the consortium look at a higher power standard and trying to move to from 5 watts to 15 watts to try to charge them even faster, because that's not even fast enough. And to be honest, people prefer that the wired chargers were faster. So we don't tend to look at cell phones as a potential application for us to recharge. We actually look at it the other way. We look at them as a potential source of energy. So there's a lot of applications like smart cards and things that you might have in your wallet, which are usually in proximity to your phone, that where you could actually recharge those devices by harvesting the energy that's emitted from the cell phone while it's downloading data or communicating with the tower, things like that. So we tend to focus more on the lower power applications, like I'd mentioned earlier, whether it's the mobile computer peripherals or the sensor type devices.
And I read recently, Charlie, in fact, I think I was at the show where you announced it, Power at a Distance, where you had a significant breakthrough. Can you talk to that a little?
Yeah, so we've been doing a lot on the R&D side over the last 2 years, looking at next generation chip development, looking at things like sensitivity, efficiency, and even expanded frequency for some of the 5G transmitters that are going to be moving into the market more frequently at these 10 plus gigahertz type frequencies. But what we looked at was increasing our sensitivity to the point to drive more distance. And that becomes important in a lot of sensor applications, because there are lots of sensor applications where single digit microwatts or even sub microwatt type levels is sufficient energy, as long as you can accumulate it over time to accumulate enough energy in a capacitor to do some type of measurement, whether that's temperature, humidity, occupancy, whatever it is, because usually those are low duty cycle sensors where I only need a reading every minute or maybe every 30 seconds or something. So I've got quite a bit of time to accumulate energy. But we put a lot of time and effort into how do we take our sensitivity, drive it a little bit lower to generate a greater distance. And what we were able to do is go from 80 feet from one of our standard transmitters out to 120 feet from one of our standard transmitters. And we're continuing to work on that to drive it even farther from our transmitter, because obviously the farther we can go, the less infrastructure we need to put in to cover, say if we want to cover a factory floor of sensors, the less infrastructure we would need to put in.
That's exciting. And I like some of the approaches you're taking to take the opposite approach with devices that are on us all the time, like a smartphone or a tablet or things of that nature, where you potentially could harvest that information, harvest the data, the power, and use it for another device that's in proximity. That's a good application. So tell me, Charlie, give me an example. Who are your customers? How do you go to market? And who are your partners?
Yeah, so we're a fabless semiconductor company. We go to market through our distributors in terms of like Arrow Electronics, DigiKey, Mouser. They stock all of our products. So we ship worldwide through Arrow Electronics. In terms of our customers, a lot of our customers come to us. We're the leader in the RF wireless power space, have had solutions on the market since 2007. We're the first company with both Part 15 and Part 18 approvals. And really, over the last 2 years, have shipped about just a little over 15 million chips now. That number's grown since the last time we talked. I think it was 10 million the last time we talked. It's up over 15 million now. So continuing to ship out chips into various markets. Obviously, consumer electronics is a big driver of that. But a lot of our interest is inbound, given our leadership position in this space. And I think that a lot of companies right now are looking at what I call their wireless power roadmap. And I think that started back in about probably 2016 when Apple announced they were going to put Qi into the phones, right? People started looking at, okay, what is this technology now that's going to be in pretty much all the smartphones? And what is it and what's beyond that? And I think people started talking about, hey, what's our wireless power roadmap? Maybe Qi might be what we use today, or pad-based charging, but how do we get off of the pad and what's next? And that's driven a lot of customers to us looking at what are the technical capabilities of the PowerCast technology and how can we implement that in future generations of our device.
And so you mentioned you've taken the approach to go through distribution. So a company like Arrow would have your products. And do customers learn about PowerCast directly from Arrow, or do they interact with PowerCast directly?
They can do any of those. So we do a lot of trade shows. We do a lot of speaking opportunities, webinars, things like that to help educate the market on RF wireless power in general and the capabilities. We try to be very practical about what the technology can do and what it also can't do. It's not going to power your blender across the room, right? That's not really the point of this technology. But we try to educate the market the best we can through multiple different avenues.
I think it's important. You said something that's really important that I think folks need to understand. At an early time in your market, you understood what you were and what you were not going to add value to. Can you address the point of safety concerns at higher power at RF with distance involved? And the challenges, not the concerns, but more of the challenges.
Yeah, I guess to back and talk about that a little bit more, from a technology perspective, it's possible to transfer larger amounts of power over distance. But when you start looking at practicality and legality, there's different challenges there. One being cost, right? If I start looking at things like high power transmitters and phased arrays and even arrays on the receiving side, all of my costs start to scale up based on number of antennas. So that doesn't always become practical when you're starting to look at the consumer electronics market, where things need to be very, very economical. And then from a regulatory perspective, the FCC and other regulatory bodies around the world really have limitations on how much power you're allowed to put out. And there's several reasons for that. The first is being a good neighbor, right? If I'm in a band and I'm putting out just lots and lots of power, it becomes a lot harder for other devices, particularly communication devices, even if you're using frequency hopping to communicate around that signal, because eventually you're going to start getting up against your adjacent channel rejection, and you're going to get swamped, right? If you get a too strong of a signal. So that's one reason that the FCC and other regulatory bodies kind of put a limit on it. The other thing is safety too. Just like cell phones have to go through safety testing for SAR testing, there's also maximum permissible exposure calculations you can do for devices that are mobile, not necessarily portable like a cell phone. But all those regulations, there's been a lot of work done by OSHA and the IEEE looking at basically how do we, as individuals, how do we use these devices in a way that's safe? And those regulations were all paved by cell phones, all put into place. And all of our transmitters that we put out into the market have to pass those same tests to make sure that they're safe for people to use and for people to be around. So we're pretty happy those regulations already exist, right? We didn't have to do anything to show that our technology is safe. Those regulations already exist.
Charlie, you brought up a couple of really good points there. The first one is near and dear to the WCA community, and that is spectrum. Can you talk just a bit about where you fit in the spectrum? What range are you working in with PowerCast transmitters and receivers?
Sure. So in terms of our receiver chip works from 10 megahertz all the way up to 6 gigahertz. So we've gone as low as 13.56 megahertz for doing NFC type harvesting. And then we've gone as high as 5.8 gigahertz up into that upper ISM band for doing power transfer to usually smaller devices. When something small needs a small antenna, we'll go higher in frequency. From a transmitter perspective, we've mostly been in the 915 megahertz band. So our power spot and our Ubiquiti transmitter are both in that particular band. And then for the cricket ball I mentioned earlier, that transmitter was at 2.45 gigahertz up in that ISM band, because the core that's inside the ball is only about 20 millimeters in diameter. So it's a relatively small device. So to get an efficient antenna, we had to move up in frequency given the size of that particular product. But the application usually drives where we go in terms of frequency, and then the region in the world also sets kind of where we can operate. So when we're in Europe, we're usually at 868 megahertz, right, which is very close to 915. There tends to be a band in that 900 range pretty much everywhere around the world. So there's just some slight modifications as we go into different regions.
And up at the 2.4 or 5.8 gigahertz space, are you running into any issues with interference with Wi-Fi?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, you have to be a good neighbor. So it comes down to following those regulations that are in place and doing either frequency hopping or doing direct sequence spread spectrum to enable those other devices to talk around you. When people always ask me about interference and do we interfere, my answer is always the same. We're just like any other radio, right? And if you're a bad radio, we will interfere with you, just like any other radio will interfere with you if you're a bad radio. But most radios nowadays, highly integrated radios, are very, very good adjacent channel rejection and things, and you don't see that type of interference because they can reject those signals that are in close proximity to them on adjacent channels. So I'll give you an example with that. Our building automation system that we have here in our headquarters, runs in the 915 megahertz band. And right now we have probably six or eight of our power spot transmitters and power caster transmitters running in our conference room for demos. And you can go in there, you can hit the wireless light switch, you can walk in there and the wireless motion sensor, they'll work every time. So again, as long as the system has a good radio, we can be interoperable. So it just comes down to making sure that those devices have those that good adjacent channel rejection.
The other piece you meant, you alluded to, but we haven't talked about yet, is the announcement you made at CES, I believe, regarding Ubiquiti. So can you talk to our listeners about Ubiquiti and what that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, we made that announcement here at CES 2023 just a little over a month ago. So last year and the year before that, we'd been working with some large oral care companies and set-top box companies. And the feedback that we were getting, which was a little bit different than kind of the industrial IoT, because this is now consumer electronics, was a $99 transmitter, which was our PowerSpot transmitter, is just a showstopper, right? It's not gonna be able to move forward because nobody's gonna buy a electronic toothbrush with a $99 transmitter. So we spent about a year looking at our architecture on the transmitter side and basically redesigned the entire thing. That new redesign is called Ubiquiti. And what we did is we spent a lot of time and effort driving the bill of material, the BOM, down to $5. And the whole mindset there is we want to enable companies like electronic toothbrush companies and set-top box companies to integrate our technology into those devices. So it'll be a plug-in transmitter that recharges your electronic toothbrush 4 feet away, or it'll be our transmitter reference design integrated in the set-top box, recharging your remote control and potentially your game controllers and things that are in proximity in the living room. But as we started having these discussions, not only did we see that price was an issue, but also that a lot of these companies want a particular look and feel to the product, right? They want it to be their colors and their style guide and all this. So it doesn't really make sense to have a one-size-fits-all transmitter. It makes more sense to have a licensable reference design that they can take, integrate into the form factor they want to match their products, and we just license that to them and let them make their own. Obviously, we provide guidance on how to implement the reference design. But at the end of the day, they're paying $5 to implement that with a small licensing fee on top of that. And we really feel like this is going to open up a lot of markets for us, particularly on the electronic toothbrush side. We're seeing a lot of traction there because if you think of an electronic toothbrush today, typically it has an electronic inductive base that you set it on. You have a cord on your countertop plugged into the AC right in your water. The cord's always in the way. The base is getting all that gunk on it from the water running off the toothbrush. So it's a great fit for our technology. We can eliminate the base altogether and have a little transmitter that plugs into your outlet and can power that toothbrush up to 4 feet away. So really excited to have that Ubiquiti reference design. The way it's coming to market right now, the reference design is available. If anyone is interested, they can reach out to us and we can talk about that licensing process. We have a module that's going to be coming out and also an end transmitter that's going to be regulatory approved. Those are targeted around June of this year. So they'll allow people to actually get and test it. But then if they want to move forward, they can move to the licensing model if they want, or they can just use that end FCC and European approved transmitter.
So with Ubiquiti, essentially as a customer, potential customer, I can come in and get the equivalent of a developer kit, which has a transmitter, and I can start figuring out if this is going to work for my particular application, and then get back in touch with my partner, Aero or PowerCast, to start thinking about how I'm going to license the technology so I can have my look and feel, etc. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's exactly what we try to do. Is we have a lot of different development tools and transmitters that you can buy through distribution. So everything's stocked at DigiKey and Mouser. We want engineers to be able to go get that that product, those dev boards, get them in the lab, test them out, see how it's going to work. And then, like you had just said, if Ubiquity is going to work for them, then they can reach out to us and we can talk about the reference design license for the transmitter itself.
So $5 bill of material cost, reference design, licensing. This is really a potential game changer for the wireless power industry in general. I wonder if you might talk about what the feedback has been like from the marketplace since your announcement.
The feedback has been very, very positive. We've had a lot of customers that we've been talking to for years that visit us every year at CES say, just what you said, this is a game changer, and really have re-engaged on implementing the technology into their product because they see a path forward with this low BOM cost transmitter. So on the receiver side, we've always been economical on that side. It's always been, you know, sub a dollar in a million pieces, right? So that's always been palatable. But that the transmitter side has always been kind of the thing that has been holding up a lot of these very, very large volume applications. And we feel like now that we've gotten it to that $5 price point, that really it's going to open up those applications. And we're already seeing that with the people that are reaching back out to us after the announcement.
Without giving away any trade secrets, can you talk about what's coming next? If you look in your crystal ball from an RF power perspective, what's next?
Yeah, like I'd mentioned earlier, we're looking at doing a lot of R&D on next generation chip designs, looking at things like sensitivity, efficiency, those 5G frequencies. New regulatory approvals. I think you're going to see a couple of those coming from us coming out this year. And there'll be approvals that aren't just necessarily to check a box, but there'll be practical approvals that people can leverage to deploy technology. And I think you're going to see a lot of new products hitting the market using the PowerCast technology, probably starting with things like oral care with the electronic toothbrushes. We have a lot of automotive stuff going on right now because there's a big push for more sensors in vehicles. And obviously with all those sensors and running all those wires, you add a lot of weight. And with that weight, you don't get the best gas mileage, right? So they want to eliminate all those wires and weight to for that greener message and fuel efficiency message. We're seeing a lot of interest on applications that are sustainable, all about eliminating batteries. So keeping batteries out of the landfill, whether by continuously recharging the ones that are in there or making a product completely battery free. So that's an area we're seeing a lot of movement right now too.
Interesting. I see a lot of talk about green initiatives, removing batteries, allowing batteries to last longer, et cetera. All over the industry, and we're seeing lots of solutions trying to converge on how best to provide a solution. Closing thoughts on RF wireless power.
Well, I guess from my perspective, I've been doing this almost 20 years now. I think it's very exciting to see the market moving forward. It's starting to really gain a lot of traction. The volumes have gone, at least for us, have gone up over 10 million units. And I think continuing to watch that grow and expand into new markets is very exciting to me. I think there are going to be a lot of applications that are going to add a lot of value and convenience to people. I think the electronic toothbrush is a great example of that. I'm very excited once that's out to have that because I've got cords on my countertop at home, my son's toothbrush, my toothbrush, and they're always in the way. It looks horrible. I think it's a great product, showcases the technology and what it can do. And pretty excited to see that come to market and a lot of the other applications that we have in the pipeline. And we'll see how that goes.
Charlie, when you started with PowerCast 20 years ago, what was the vision then, and how has that changed over time as you've executed in the market?
Well, I think the vision has been pretty consistent throughout the years, right? It was to expand the technology into many different markets. I think the technology might have been a little bit ahead of the consumer electronics market. When we started launching our products, I don't think the Wireless Power Consortium even existed, right? So Qi wasn't even a thing yet. So we were pre-Qi. And we spent a lot of years in the industrial and commercial type applications, like the machinery and the robotic arms and things like that we talked about earlier. And I think the exciting thing that's happening is the awareness of wireless power is growing year to year, and people are starting to really understand what it can and can't do. I think some people don't think it can be done at all, but once they start hearing about it and what it can do and what it can't do, they really understand it is possible and it fits into a lot of different markets. And as that awareness grows, the amount of deployments and design wins is going to grow as well.
Charlie, how can people learn more about RF wireless power and PowerCast?
Good way is to go to our website. If you go to powercastco.com, there's a lot of content there. We have a YouTube series called Powered by PowerCast, which I think is a great way to see how our technology can be deployed. And there's one on the toothbrush, there's one on the cricket ball, really interesting stuff with, you can actually see the products that it's integrated into, how it works. I think that's a great place to start for people, is maybe watch a couple of those videos, and it'll really get you spun up on key applications for what we do and how it works.
Charlie, thanks for taking the time to be with us today. Really exciting news about Ubiquiti and where PowerCast is headed. So I want to again thank you on behalf of our listeners for joining us.
Yeah, Tom, appreciate you having me on.
Thank you for joining us today on Connections. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please subscribe at the WCA website or wherever you get your podcasts. See you next week for a new episode.